normal with Satori. And basically, it's not a Zeya. It's more than a Zeya. It's a Mishnah in Tamim. That the Levim used to say Shire every day. They had a separate, a different psalm, a different Shire. On Shabbos, Oyeimrim, Mizve Shir Leim HaShabbos. Lovei Leim Shekulei Shabbos, Umnucho Lachai Elamim. Why? And I heard once my father, the Chaim Levroch, in the name of Reb Chaim, that the Nevi'im used to say so, actually. They used to say on Shabbos, Mizmer Shir Leim HaShabbos, the beginning of the psalm, and then they used to conclude, Mizmer Shir Leim HaShabbos, Leim Shekulei Shabbos, Umnucho Lachai Elamim. Again, there are two Shabbatot, two Shabbos. There are the Shabbos Lesato. This is a day in the week on which a Jew has to abstain from work. He has a different, and adopt a different lifestyle. But it is just, it's an ordinary Shabbos. It's a day on which you don't work, that's all. And the day on which you study Torah, correct? Because the Shabbos is consecrated to the study of Shabbat. But that's all. But there's a Shabbos Leila. Shabbos Abba. The Shabbos Leila is Leim Shekulei Shabbos. A day which is whose entirety and the very essence is Shabbos, Shekulei Shabbos. And will express itself in a variety of ways, in particular in the Nucho Lachai Elamim. So this basically it's a Mishnah, even though I may call your attention, Rashi and Rosh Hashanah differ with Reb Chaim in the Pshat, the Yim Shkolei Shabbos and Nucho Lachai Elamim. So if you look up the Rashi and Rosh Hashanah in Ruah Bezdin, so you'll find that I was wrong. But anyway, in Shabbos we have the two ideas. Of Shabbos Lesat or Shabbos Leila. You know very well that as far as this Amigdosh in Yerushalayim is concerned, there is certainly a double image theory. Who doesn't know of Yerushalayim Shel Mata and Yerushalayim Shel Maila? Even Zionists know about it. Who doesn't know of this Amigdosh Shel Maila and this Amigdosh Shel Mata? It's mentioned in Yoshia. Migdosh ad Hashem kein in yodecho ad Hashem yimlech levan roya. Where is all that mentioned? In Yirmiyahu in our Haftarah. Kisei Kovet, the Kisei Kovet, the throne of glory, Morei Merishen, from the very beginning, even before the beginning, is Mekein Migdoshenu. When a Jew speaks about a Beis HaMikdash, he has in mind not the brick and the mortar, and the sand and the gold of the in the Beis HaMikdash. This is not the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash is lemato, but another Beis HaMikdash. Kisei Kovet Morei Merishen, which is Mekein Mikdashenu. So it's a Beis HaMikdash shel Maila. And that is why Mikve Yisrael, we have hope in Thee, Almighty. That is the reason why Vashimeitze Anias Migdash Sheichem, it was interpreted in positive terms, not in negative terms. Why is that Alpish Shemim Migdash Osamenem? Yeah, the enemy could have destroyed, and did destroy, everything. But not the Beis HaMikdash Shel Maila. The Morei Merishen Mekein Migdashenu. And as long as the Mekein Migdashenu exists, so the Shechina resides, not only the Maila, but the Mata as well. And if the Shechina resides, is Mikve Yisrael. So we have hope that everything will be restored. And the people will return. And that neither the land will forget her children, nor will the children forget her mother. This pasuk, Kisei Kovet, Morei Merishen, Mekein Migdashenu, Mikve Yisrael. And it's very strange that the Pechache, which speaks of Hashemesis Mekdashechem, is accompanied by the Nevuah of Yechezkel, of Yirmiyahu, what was the prophet of Churban, of desolation, but still he told the people, don't worry, there will be Churban, there will be desolation, many things will be destroyed, but not the Mekei Mekdashenu. And as long as the Mekei Mekdashenu is more in Merisha, is the Mikveh Yisrael will not disappoint you. And that's why the Aftere of the Chukesa was chosen. This chapter in Jeremiah was chosen as the Aftere of the Chukesa. Because without that chapter of Jeremiah, without this six-word sentence, I would have said that Rashimesis Mekdashechem should be interpreted in the negative. I'll destroy not only the physical structure, but the Kedusha as well. What saved the Rashi Meisias Mekdashechem is this six-word sentence, Kisi Kovid, Mori Merishen, Mekei Mekdashenu. So very strange. Now, Achim Meisim Gdashim started his work with the problem of Golos. Amos, we already recited Amos, who tells the people, well, what is actually the synopsis of Amos' message? Don't be frightened. You might lose Eretz Yisrael for a while, short a while, or sometimes for a long time. But the final destiny of the people of Israel, of the Knesset Yisrael, will be fully realized. You'll come back. And then the land will be yours forever. And we ask, we are not satisfied with Amos' answer. We ask, I mean, where is the guarantee? Who is the Oref, so to say? Who endorses the promise? So when we come to where? From Achimei's Deshi to Behar and the Chukesa. Where is the endorsement of that? This is in Behar. The story about Yirmiyahu, who bought real estate, purchased the field from his uncle on the day on which Yerushalayim was attacked by Nebuchadnezzar, and God gave him his uncle gave him two documents, two deeds. The Chosum and the Goloi, the mysterious deed, and the plain deed, and the Novi said, Eid Yiknu Sodei Sekromim, Bore Yerushalayim, and particularly what was important is the sentence, Kisei Kovid, Morem Rishain, Mekeni Dashenu, Mikve Yisrael Adashem. This is actually the guarantees in the double image theory of the Mikdash Lemato, Mikdash Lemayim. This is. So is Achimeis and Gdeshim, state the fact that Israel will come back to Eretz Israel from captivity, explains the reasons why he believes so strongly believe in return of the children to Eretz Israel is because of the six word sentence Kisei Kovid Morem Rishain Mekei Mekdashenu Mikve Yisrael. That means the one unit, Achimeis and Gdeshim and Baruch Kesach, is one unit. There is fright of Golos, there is consolation, and there is the, and then in Jeremiah explains to us what is the reason. What guarantee do you have that the Beis Hamikdash and Eretz Yisrael will be restored? And the guarantee is Mekei Mekdashenu. Kisei Kovid Morem Rishain Mekei Mekdashenu. Now, next. There is another affair in Parshas Vayikra, in the Sefer Vayikra, and which is accompanied as usual by a haftar. And the question as far as this haftar is concerned is not so much about the common denominator. As a matter of fact, not only do they have a common motif, they are almost identical. The parsha and the haftar are almost identical. And I would like to gain a few insights into the haftar, because there is a problem. So what is new about it? I mean, the Novi repeats exactly what the Torah said. Which haftar they have in mind? Which one? I don't hear. Emor, correct. Emor, if you what Magna Chumash, when you study the haftar of Emor, it's a repetition, almost verbatim repetition of the Torah Shemiksav. So the question now is the reverse. Why was it chosen? Another haftar should have been chosen, but here is simply a repetition. See, of course, this problem doesn't bother me. But I believe that I would like to explain to you the haftar of Emor, and what did this haftar do with regard to our final hope of Gulas Yisrael. The haftar of Parshas Emor is almost a repetition of the text of the Torah. However, a thorough analysis will yield interesting conclusions. First, let me ask you a simple question. The book of Vayikra, particularly the Parshas Emor, deals almost exclusively with the laws pertaining to Kerem, to Kune. It is called Teras Kerem. It's called Teras Kerem. So Yecheskel, in his prophecies, quite a number of prophecies, repeats the laws of Kehune. I mean, those laws with regard to which Dakein has a different, is commanded, those laws which Dakein is commanded to fulfill, in contrast with Israel, who is not duty bound to comply with those laws. I don't have to tell you what I have in mind. Now, but if you start reading the haftar of Yecheskel, will somebody read the pasuk of Yecheskel? Will you read the pasuk of Yecheskel? It's so cool. והקנים אהובים בני צודק אשר שומרו משמרת מקדושי ביסייס בני ישראל מעולי הימו יקרבו עלי לשופני הימו יובאו על מקדושי והימו יקריבו על שולחני לשופני ושומרו את משמרת. When you heard the passage, and if you are up my chumash and read it carefully, there is one difference between a mayor. And I'm not speaking about the differences which Chazal already dealt with. This is Chazal already they dealt with this problem. Yes. But I'm dealing with something else. The book of Vayikra, the Sedre of Emor, is a code of laws. It's a code. were the laws pertaining, the special laws pertaining to the Canaan, were formulated by the Torah, correct? In particular, the laws which are related to the Canaan personally, not natives, as far as the Canaan is, as far as the ministrations of the Canaan unto the Almighty, but as far as the person of the Canaan is concerned. This is in Emea. The pasuk in the Aftere starts with what? The Akenim Halvim Bnei Tzadik Asher Shomru Mishmeres Migdash Migdoshai Besez Bnei Yisroel Meolai Heimo Yikrivu Alai Lishorseni Heimo Yivei Al Migdoshai. And whoever studies Yecheskel carefully, in the previous chapter, Yecheskel tells us the following story, that many Kenim have betrayed the Kuhune, that they were walked away from the Kuhune. Many became defiled with Avidizore, many because they intermarried, or they married women who were not qualified to marry a Kohen, and so forth. But there was a Bnei Tzadik, a family of Kenim, called Bnei Tzadik, who were committed, totally committed to the law, to the Torah, and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When all the people, B'Seizne Yisrael, who went astray, B'Seizne Yisrael, they remained steadfast in their commitment, and they continued to live like Kenim the way the Torah has required of them. B'Seiz Bnei Yisroel L'Akeinim Alvim Neitzorim Asher Shomru Mishmeres Migdoshai, not so much guarding the Mishamigdash. There was no Mishamigdash to be guarded. It was 70 years Asher Shomru Migdoshai means they lived in accordance with the law. B'Seiz Bnei Yisroel L'Alai, at that time when the people of Israel, many, the majority, separated themselves from me and they went astray. What Yecheskel is saying is something very important. A mayor contains the laws of Kehune, the law of Kehune, the law. Yecheskel in the Aftere, to a mayor, is speaking about Kuhune as a promise, that Kuhune will not disappear, that Kuhune will exist, will continue forever. Because I want you to know, Akein is not, Kuhune is not just a matter for Messiah Kapai or for being called out. When it's about Kuhune, we don't have in mind the only Messias Kapayim. Messias Kapayim is a mitzvah, correct. But there is something more than Messias Kapayim. There is something more than being called up, Kuhune is a part of Kedushas Yisrael. Am Yisrael, the people of Israel, the nation, is Amot Lisoy, the Gemara says, is a three-structured or threefold community. Amot Lisoy, a threefold nation. It is Cain, Levi, Yisrael. And it's a part of the Kedusha, of Kedushas Yisrael. But within Kedushas Yisrael, we have 3 degrees of Kedusha. Kedushas Kehune, Kedushas Levi, and Kedushas Yisrael. And if there is an institution which is exposed to defilement and to disintegration, this is the institution of Kuhune. Already when Ezra came back from Babel, so you read in Ezra and Nehemiah about Ezra's struggles, efforts to restore the old Kuhune, because the people in Babel intermarried into Gentile families, der in der Mehre des Pfarrers Psule Kuhune are concerned. Do we have the children, and of course, intermarriage, whether the secular Jews want to like it or dislike it, an intermarriage affects the status of a child. Some children are going. Some children are mamzeri. Some children are halolim. I mean, you can't help it. This is the law. But, of course, I mean, after they've been exiled from Eretz Yisrael, and they have the lost control over marriages, kuhune, levie, and ordinary kedushas Yisrael in Babel. So they actually lost control over kedushas Yisrael. And many kenim were put aside, and they were told they cannot minister into the Almighty in the Beis Hamikdash, nor were they permitted to eat Trume. When you read in Ezra Nehemiah, Adamit Kain Lurim Latumim, those people cannot be identified as Kainim, they'll have to wait for the Melech HaMashiach to give them the identity of Kehune. And Kehune is a very fragile institution, very fragile. Particularly, I discovered that, in the United States. When I became a rabbi in the United States, and in Boston, first wedding I performed, so the husband was all dressed up with a beautiful carnation, with lapel, a nice boy, made impression, a nice boy. So then I began to fill in the ksude. I said, you have to identify yourself. Cain, lady, or you saw her. So I met with a critical look, with astonishment. Well, he didn't understand what I was talking about. So I was astonished. But I recovered from my astonishment. You know why? For the majority of the Jews in America, the vast majority, doesn't know what Kuhune is. Absolutely does not know what Kuhune is. Meet a Jew on the street, or a student on a campus. I don't mean those Bali children. I'm not speaking about Bali children. I'm speaking about every Jew in the United States. I mean, the youth on the campus, ask them whether they are caring to leave Israel, and they wouldn't understand you. Not only they wouldn't have an answer, they wouldn't understand what you're talking to them. And that's why I always tell the people, K'tanim, G'dilim, whether they reached maturity or they didn't reach maturity, to go up to Duchen. All children go up to Duchen. It's no time now to play around with Rashi versus Stasis, where there is Chinuch and Kuhune, and Birkas Kampai. Because the whole institution of Kuhune is actually about to disintegrate and collapse. But it's a terrible problem. So, in a more, there is no promise by God that Kuhune will exist forever. No? The laws of Kuhune were formulated. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meishu did not disclose to the people whether Kuhune is going to exist, to continue, or the people, or the Jews, will defile the Kuhune the way they have defiled many things. There is a law of Kuhune. A mayor is a parsha which deals with the laws of Kuhune. It's not a parsha of the promise that Kuhune will exist. This was Yecheskel's job. Yecheskel said, before I discuss the laws of Kehune, what a king is supposed to do, what he's not supposed to do, let me say one thing. Kehune will exist forever. I understand the menace to Kehune. I understand the difficulties with which we'll meet. I understand that it will be very hard and tough on our part to preserve the purity of Kehune. But it will be preserved. Before Yecheskel began to tell the people the laws of Kehune, he says, the Akeni Malvin Reitzore, a small group of Kehune. they came, their ancestor was the Tzaddik. But this group distinguished itself mainly by what? By its steadfast loyalty. Steadfast loyalty and complete total dedication to the laws of Kahune. So they served God at a time at which the people, the majority of the people, lost completely, lost the understanding for Kedushas Kahune. B'teiz Bnei Yisrael b'olai, heim lo yitruf lo olai l'shoseni, v'heim lo yoveyo al mikdoshi, v'heim lo yatrivu al shulchoni. V'shom was nishmeres harishon. And believe me that we need such a promise nowadays as well. But I believe that the Cheskos promise is good for our times too. Because Chas v'Sholem, if Kehunas should be forgotten, then one important aspect of Kedushas Yisroel will drop out. Will disappear, will vanish.
Now,
there is another aspect which Yecheskel has developed with regard to Kuni, which the Teiren mentions it, but not in the Meir, but with this Abrochov. But apparently, Chazal, when they introduced the affair of Yecheskel, so wanted the people to know immediately what is required of them. I'll ask you a simple question. It's aspect number two. Number one, Yecheskel introduced the promise, not only a law of Kehune, but the promise of Kehune, that Kehune will be, is a permanent institution. Next, what did Yecheskel introduce that we found it important that the prophecy of Yecheskel became the afteri of Emea? He actually redefined the task of Kehune. He redefined it. He reformulated it. Now let me ask you, what is the sense, what is the source of Kedushas Kehune? Why are the Kehunim superior as far as Kedusha is concerned to the Levim and Israel? What is the source of Kedushas Kehune? To what task is the case should a king be totally committed? And what actually aspect he should unreservedly dedicate himself? What is the answer? What is the source of Kedushas Kehune? In what respect does he possess superiority over the ordinary Jew? Of course, the answer is, he's ministering, he's participating in the Aveda, in the service of God, or ministering unto God. He's the origin of his specific image. His superior status in the community. And the Pasuk says in the mayor, Ki lechem lekov u'makriv v'hu yakedish. Because the bread of God they do offer, and therefore they shall be holy. The holiness of the Kohen, according to it, is a result of his steady engagement in worship, in the cultic service of God. It is the dedication to Aveda and Korbanos that generates the Kedusha. I have one question which should be answered. Kehunim, you take all the Kehunim. I don't know how many. I mean, you have in Shmuel, I know in Shmuel, in Divrei Yomim, you have numbers as far as the kingdom are concerned, and a report about the statistics. But we know that the kingdom were divided into how many? I had to mention Mishmeres, 24 Mishmeres divisions. Say, if you have divided the Kehuna in 24 Mishmeres, it means that each Kehen could do Aveda only 2 weeks a year. 2 weeks a year? Because once in every 24 weeks. Right? There are a few months differential, but anyway, it is about 2 weeks every year. Moreover, the Mishmor was divided into subdivisions, but they have. Each Bet Av served 2 days a year. In other words, a Kohen used to serve only 2 days a year. That's all. So let me ask, what did the Kohen do the rest of the year? What do you do the rest of the year? So you say nothing? So the answer is, so why do I have to give him Matnes Kehuna? The whole idea, the whole system of Matnes Kehuna is based upon the fact that the Kohanim were preoccupied with their service in the Beis HaMikdash and therefore could not earn a living by their own efforts. But it does not, it's not in accordance with the statistics we just mentioned. The question was asked by whom? This question. It's not a new one. Who asked this question? I mean, somebody did ask this question. It's too obvious. Moshe Rabbeinu. Where did he ask this question? It was Esav Brochov. In his last testament, he addressed the people on the day of his death, of his departure from us. So he redefined Kehuna, the task of Kehuna. He says, Ulalei v'omar, Yeru mishpatecho le'yakon, v'seroscho le'yisrael. The task of the Kehen is to teach, not to minister. Minister is a second-rate task. Teaching is the main job into which a Kohen must engage, must be engaged. Teaching! Zeru mishpatecho le'yakov, you should instruct your laws, instruct the Yaakov in your laws, v'serosho le'yisrael. In addition to that, they have another cultic job, namely, to minister unto the Lord. You see the same about the cholera mizvechara. But this is the second task. The first task is Yerom Mishpatecho Le'yake V'serosho Le'yisrael. The Kedusha of Kehuna consists in teaching the people. Not in ministering, not exclusively ministering to the Lord, to God, but in teaching the people. You say, and the Kedusha of Kehuna consists in a Kedusha of Masere, of Tira Shebaal Peh. They taught the people, they were the Rosh Yeshiva, they were the Melamdim, they were the instructors, they were the teachers. As a matter of fact, a Kohen who does not teach the people, his Kedusha is incomplete. A Yisrael who teaches the people, he is engaged in the propagation of God's word. He is engaged in that. This Yisrael has the status of a Kohen. There is some Kedusha. And perhaps the main source of Kedusha, Kedushas Kehuna, which is actually the of an educational character, namely the act of teaching. Did Yechezkel say it? Did Yechezkel say it? Vesami Yeru. Yadil. That's exactly. Yechezkel already has the second date. That the main source of Gedusha for Canaan is teaching. And as I emphasized before, it means, in other words, a Cain who doesn't teach, actually, I mean, is not loses, but what his Gdusha is not exalted the way it should have been, and a Yisroel who teaches shares in Gdusha's Kehuna. This is the reason for inserting Parshas Meyadeis in Parshas Semeah, which is very difficult to understand. You start Parshas Semeah, what do you have in Parshas Semeah? First of all, Tumas Mes. A king cannot define himself as a dead body. Number two, it's a notion. Whom a king is allowed to marry, whom is not allowed to marry. Next, that Balimumin should not be offered on the Mizbeah. Again, it's addressed, the law is addressed to the Kenim, because the Kenim used to decide which, what is fit to be an offer or what is unfit to be an offer. Yes. Suddenly, we have no transition. We realize that the Torah interrupts to tell us about the laws of Kehune, and begins to tell us a story about Kviyas Meadim, the fixing of the Yom Tevin. What has it got to do with the previous chapter? What's the answer? The answer is that who did fix the Meadim? To whom did the Torah entrust the Kviyas Meadim? To whom? To the scholars, to the teachers, to the Sanhedrin. Asher Tikra Isa Mikroi Kedesh. Who are they? The Kehanim. That the Torah suddenly interrupts suddenly, because after Parshas Meadim, the Torah spoke about the Kehanim who ministers to the Almighty. Kislachem Alekov Umakrib. Now the Torah tells us something else. Yeah, but a king has another job, another task. He's dedicated to another, he's committed to something else, namely to scholarship and teaching. And this is clear, this identical is clear as well. Does Yechezkel do it? Mention it? What does Yechezkel say? Okay. The Kriyas Meadim. Meadai Vishapsisa in the Shabbatot. The Kriyas Meadim is performed by the Sanhedrin, by the scholars, by the teachers, Meire Umo of the nation. And that's why it is the job of the king. What else? What else? Aspect. Something else was that, please. Something else was assigned to the king. Namely what? Yeah. Namely, apparently to teach people on an abstract level. Just teach people theoretically, theory, is not good enough. Whoever knows was that the demud or the half how Yehudus wanted the people to act. Of course, the first job is Mishnantam Levanecho, means to teach people. But Mishnantam Levanecho does not mean to teach them at an abstract level. I mean, theory. Mishnantam Levanecho refers also to teach people how to act, and particularly the principles of justice. Don't be afraid of anybody. And you should remember Kamishpat Lekim, judgment is up to the Almighty. The fact is that the task of the king, so the Rambam has defined the task of the king is a twofold one. First of all, to defend the land of Israel, to defend simply. If military action is necessary, the king should do it. And secondly, lishber zrei reshoim, to break the arm of the strong ones, of the evildoers, to break the arm. This administration of justice. And that's exactly what a king is supposed to do. And I want you to tell you, I want you to understand. We have many stories about Rabbonim Afor, many stories. Germany has its stories, Lithuania has its stories, and so forth, about Rabbonim Afor. Stories do not revolve so much about their scholarship. Yes, we have many stories like that. But this is not the main topic which actually has motivated us to tell stories. But the main topic was their sense, their sensitive conscience, their sense of justice that the Rav possessed. For instance, there are many stories about my grandfather, and please, I'm not somehow trying to sell you my grandfather. First of all, he doesn't need to be sold. He doesn't need to be sold. Secondly, I'm not a chosid, in the sense that I tell stories in order to glorify and magnify a person. But my grandfather, and there are many stories about his intellect. He had a great intellect, no doubt about that. I mean, in my opinion, he had one of the strongest intellects that lived at the turn of the century. Not only among Jews, but among Goyim as well. His intellect was tremendous. Had he been a philosopher, he would have changed, or a scientist in any field, in this particular discipline upside down, completely, completely. But I'll tell you frankly, this commands respect, but I'm not impressed by it. What could he do, Ami? Yeah. He had an excellent head. He was a genius, no doubt. Abstract thinker and a revolutionary as far as interpretation of aloha is concerned. He revolutionized aloha. My father once told me I'm still acting like a chassid, huh? My father has told me that if not for Reb Chaim, there wouldn't have been a possibility to teach modern young men who have a good training in science aloha. He made it possible to teach aloha, that aloha can be taught to anyone. Even those who are advanced in logical analysis, I mean, will find that the aloha is just as exalted and perhaps as abstract as the most advanced mathematical logic or analytical logic. But what I'm not impressed by that. I mean, this was given to him by the Almighty. Some people present this beautiful, precious gift, but some people doesn't give anything. This is not what I am. I'm impressed by his heroism as far as social justice is concerned. If there was a real socialist, a real one, not a Marxist socialist, but a real socialist, with a most sensitive conscience and sensitive heart, and his unlimited courage, he was. And I'm saying it in order to explain to you what the Torah has demanded of the Kohen. Yeah. I'll tell you, yeah, I have many stories. He actually fought, the ones who at least I'm not trying to mislead you. He once, there was a strike in Breeze. Who could strike in Breeze? He didn't manufacture anything. But there was one article they manufactured. Namely, Matze. So those who worked in the Matze shops went out and striked. So Reb Chaim supported them. He collected money in order to feed the people who were on strike. It was Brisk, it was not New York or Boston in 1979. It was Brisk at the turn of the century. He almost lost his rabbonis. But he did not deviate. I'll give you another example. The halacha is, the law is, that if Rahman and Islam, two people die the same day, so the woman has been buried first, and the man afterwards. The reason for it is a different story. So it happened in Brisk, it happened, that his most outstanding friend of Reb Chaim was a great scholar, as a Balabos was a great scholar. He actually was responsible for the fact that Reb Chaim was elected Rabbi of Brisk, otherwise would have never been elected. Died on a certain morning. At the same time, a poor woman in the Brisk Ghetto died. And it was in the winter. The day is short. So the Gaboy Chavakadisha figured out that the Levi, as far as the burial of the poor woman is concerned, it would make no difference whether she would be buried at night or in the morning. In Lithuania they used to bury dead at night. Yeah. Or in the morning, because no one will come to the funeral anyway. But however, Chaim Zalman Lipschitz, which was his name, I mean, he was the pillar of the community. In the morning, you'll have a big send-off. But in the evening, not many people will come. And they decided to bury him first and to prepare him for burial first. So Reb Chaim heard the story. He sent a messenger to them to have a Kaddisha to stop preparing Reb Chaim Zalman Lipschitz, but to bury the poor woman first. And if his burial will take place at night, we can't help it. So the Kaddisha ignored his orders, instructions, and continued to prepare the woman for the Reb Chaim Zalman Lipschitz for burial. So Reb Chaim took his cane, put on his coat, and told the Shamis. The Shamis told me, the Shamis actually was present there. He told me this stuff. He told Shamis, come on. And he went to the house of Reb Chaim Zalman Lipschitz, his greatest friend, his most outstanding friend, who sacrificed himself actually, in order to elect Reb Chaim, dear Rabbi of Brisk. He went to the house and told the Kaddisha to leave him and to go to the ghetto and bury the woman first. This is tremendous courage. Not the courage because people will criticize him, did criticize him, or he lost a few of his supporters. It is courage because he acted against himself. He himself mourned the passing of his best friend. He sacrificed his own self, his own emotion. After all, he reciprocated. this friendship. And he couldn't help it. He was a prisoner of the law. And one has to sometimes have a lot of courage in order to be a prisoner of the law and to carry the law out. I can tell you hundreds of such stories. There are no mixing, there are no miracles. But people, a great man in theory, a great man with a great intellect, should also have a great heart and a sensitive heart. Have particularly courage. And that's exactly what the Torah demanded from the king. Does the Cheskel say it? Valriv Emo Yando. Wherever there is litigation, wherever there is conflict, wherever two people disagree with each other, and the Rav has to intervene, is Emo Yamdu, we should stand upright. Not give in, not compromise, but enforce and implement the law. This is the second. The king is a teacher, his job is to enforce, to administer justice. And that's exactly what. And then, what else? What is the third aspect which the Danovi army has formulated as far as Kehuna is concerned? Not Danovi, but actually, this is the Chumash Yetzer HaShemeshav. Yes. I beg your pardon? But the king is Mitaya the Mitzera? You mean I didn't hear you? What? Ben Tomer Itoya, Gil. I believe that the third principle is to be found in the Aftere of Tazria. Who remembers the Aftere of Tazria? What? Love it? What is the story? The story is there was Naaman. There was Naaman who was a leper. There was Naaman who was a leper. And he came to Eretz Yisrael to Elisha, and Elisha healed him, cured him of leprosy. Elisha, and Gehazi, what are the opinion that Elisha should accept remuneration and a fee for his miraculous job? And Elisha refused to accept, and Gehazi, disobeying religion, Elisha's orders, ran after Naaman and got some gifts from him, and he was driven out by Elisha from his house. And Gehazi himself became a leper. This is the affair, correct? What has it got to do with the parsha? The parsha speaks about Mitzvah, correct? But what does the story of Elisha got to do with the parsha? With the parsha of Tazria. Tazria is the parsha of Mitzroim, correct? And the affair is about a Mitzvah who was cured by a Jewish prophet, by Elisha. Is this so important to know, about Naaman? What's important here is the refusal on the part of Elisha to accept remuneration or a fee for his curing, of Naaman. Why did he refuse? Because the main task of the Novi and the king is to enhance the prestige of the afihados among Jews and non-Jews alike. Naaman was very impressed by the miraculous deed on the part of Elisha. As a matter of fact, he was ready, I mean, to convert. And he asked Elisha about Avodah Zarah. Because when he walks in into the temple with the king of Aram, he has to bow when the king bows before the idol. So he asked Elisha whether he's allowed to do so or not. But Elisha considered the deed on the part of Kehes as wrong, because the accepting of gifts would undermine the high prestige, which the high prestige and respect which Elisha, I mean, which Naaman had for Elisha. The job of the king, of the king, is like that of the Navi. The Kaddish Shem Yisrael, or Rabbi. That's exactly what Gehazi misunderstood. And that is what the Navi Yehazi, and that is the book of Vayikra. See, the book of the redemption, of the final redemption, it's also the book of Kehuna. It's not just the minister in Kehuna. Not just the cultic, the group which engages in cultic activities. No, it's more than that, by far more. It's a group of teachers, it's a group of administrators of justice, people with a sensitive heart, sensitive mind, and people who engage in chesed and don't expect any compensation, any remuneration for that one, for the chesed. And let me at the end, in conclusion, say the following. Our Torah has been exposed to attacks since the days of revelation on Mount Sinai. The Torah was the target for most vicious attacks, abuse, and ridicule. Maimonides, in his letter to Taimon, to the Kehillah in Taimon, to the community in Yemen, says that our enemies or our antagonists are planning to destroy us in two ways, in a double manner. Physically, of course, Hitler tried it just in our time, as well as spiritually, to erase Jewish identity. And Maimonides says that nevertheless, no matter how strong the conspiracy is to destroy the Jew, he will not succeed, he'll fail in achieving this objective. My man is in the Gerestim. In the quotes of Pasuk of Isaiah, Kol kli olayich l'yutzlach, any weapon formed against thee will not be successful, v'chol loshein toku mitoch l'mishpot, and every tongue which will sit in judgment over thee, tarshi, you'll condemn it. It means that our antagonist will fail as far as both plans are concerned. They'll never destroy the Jew physically, nor will they make the Jew forget his identity. But even nowadays, I have hope that the Jew, I mean, there was a 1945 after the Holocaust, I mean, it became known to the world, the Jew. I mustn't say I had grave doubt, Chas v'Sholem, but I was very pessimistic, very sad, about the prospect of the Jew to survive. Now somehow, of course, I mean, a big role is played by the Medinas Israel, but it's a tremendous role, right? It is somehow the symbol of indestructibility of the Jew, spiritually as well as physically. It's an old story. My mind did not say anything new, and we all hope that the tongue which sits in judgment over us, as well as the weapon which our enemies forge against us, will fail. However, if there is a book If the whole Torah was this light, there is no other book which was this light for our antagonist as the book of Leviticus, of the code of the priests. Since the days, what shall I say, of Neo-Christianity, the Lei Chazal, there was an organized attack against Kehune and the book of Kehune, namely, Sefer Yichud. The Yotism among the Bible critics, when they come to Sefer Yichud, so they enjoyed. They enjoy the opportunity very much, the opportunity to abuse and to ridicule and to destroy their cynicism, their sarcasm, the book of the Vayikra of Hamishach Mishterah. Because by destroying Vayikra, the book of Kehune, they destroy Kehune. By destroying Kehune, they destroy the Beis Hamikdash. By destroying the Beis Hamikdash, they destroy all the hopes which we have to come back and to build the Beis Hamikdash. By destroying the Beis Hamikdash, now hopes Moshiach, they destroy also the Jewish identity. The people to whom the land was promised are not the Jews, but some other people. You know, I don't have to tell you. And how did we react to this, to our enemies and antagonists? In this regard, how did we react? What did we do throughout the ages? We have a funny method how to react to such attacks, vicious attacks, to false accusations, to misinterpretation, and to lying. We have a funny approach to it. The Ramban, in his letter, you all know the phrase. Let me paraphrase the Ramban. The Ramban in his letter upon his arrival in Eretz Yisrael, this is the last letter we have from him, we don't know where it disappeared, writes to the son about the desolation and the chub which prevails in Eretz Yisrael. And there is this famous statement, Kol HaKodesh V'Yeser Chorev V'Yeser. Whatever is the most holy to us is most desolate. And I can say the approach of the Jew to all attacks, on the part of his enemies. Kol ma shemulag b'yeser, anything which is most ridiculed the most, any other spiritual value or Jewish institution which is the most abused the most, is choving oleinu b'yeser. Is dear, and we cherish it the more. Interesting is that Vayikra was chosen to be read between Pesach and Shavuot. This is the Sefer Vayikra. Shmini is the first Shabbos after Vayikra, and before we are ready to celebrate Shavuot, we have to read the Teichase in the Chukesai. We do read not only the Teichase, but the Parshas Bamidbar as well. And it means that when you go to Har Sinai and Shavuot, we have the whole Torah in our hand. But in particular, we have Sefer Vayikra. And this is not in the Minyak, it's not just, it's an old Minyak, it's mentioned in Medrash, that you start with a child, to start teaching a child Sefer Vayikra. This is that book. It's the book of Kehune. And every Jew should act as if you were a king. After all, Kehune was not given to a single person, to a single tribe. But Yisraeli Mamleches Kehine and Kadesh will be a kingdom of Kehine. Every Jew can become a king. How can he become a king? By teaching, by administering justice, and by engaging in chesed. And the Kadesh Shem Shemayim. That's all.
their entrance.
There are exits on 187th Street to your left as you walk outside, and exits to 186th on your right when you walk out into Amsterdam Avenue. Please walk slowly. There are a number of people we have to thank for helping with tonight's lecture. I'd like to thank the ushers Barry Holzer, Yossi Klausner, Ari Jacobs, Phil Flumenhoff, Robbie Marcus, Barry Feldman, Steve Ettinger, Stu Verständig, Ruben Brecher, and Noah Simons.